All right, everybody, why don't we wrap up those conversations and hit the pause button for about 40 minutes or so. Pick it up again in a little bit. Good to be with you. Good to see your faces. If you're new here this morning, welcome. We're glad that you're here. And, you know, we are in the habit of saying that whether you're here once or forever, we're glad that you're here today because your presence here today matters. And you're contributing to our life by being here and lending your voice. And so we're glad that you're here. How many of you grew up knowing what Lent was? Can I see a show of hands? Wow. Okay. That actually surprises me. I didn't learn about Lent until seminary. And I was like, what? What's this Lent thing? You know, I grew up in very charismatic kind of Pentecostal streams of Christianity, and this just wasn't on the radar. Good Friday, Monday, Thursday, Monday? You know, I was so confused for a while. What I did pick up occasionally in culture was that something about like Fish Fridays. Yeah, okay, Fish Fridays, yeah. And then I would hear about people talking about like not eating chocolate during Lent. You know, and so I came to like associate food with Lent, and those were the things that it seemed to revolve around. You know, I was very, very confused. Later, though, later I learned that if you boil it down, Lent is a season of preparation. That was its original intent. In fact, if you go way back, what you find is that people who were new to Christianity, the early church in different parts of the world, this wasn't true in all parts of the world, but in some parts, the season of Lent was the time in which those new Christians kind of got ready to be baptized on Easter. And Easter morning, you would all go down to the river or the lake or whatever, and you would be baptized. But Lent became this season of preparation. And it still kind of maintains some of that same sense, a time to get ready, a time to look at our lives maybe more closely than we normally would. And to ask ourselves, is there anything in my life that's getting in the way of the resurrection of Jesus, of the renewal of Jesus? You know, is there anything that's kind of keeping me from knowing that and experiencing that? And so what we've been doing here during Lent for us is we've been following Jesus into the wilderness, because the wilderness is often a metaphor, an image that is thought of during Lent, because we see Jesus spend a time in the wilderness in preparation. We see the people of Israel, 40 years, not 40 days, 40 years in the wilderness. And there are other places where we find Elijah spends some time in the wilderness, and David spends time in the wilderness, and Ruth and Naomi, and on it goes. So we've been trying to ask ourselves, what does it mean for us? What would it mean for you to enter the wilderness? And the wilderness is often a place where we ask questions about ourselves, where we really wrestle with our identity, who we are, who we really think we are, where maybe, as we'll see today, we're tempted to pursue and to kind of chase after false identities. So it's a time of wrestling, a time of exploring, a time of preparation. And I think every week we've read this passage from Matthew 3, starting in verse 16, and then going to chapter 4, verse 13. So I'm going to read that again. You're welcome to listen, or you can get a Bible out if you'd like and read along. Just if you're curious, I'm reading from the New Living Translation, if you have the ability to sync up and you want to. So we're starting with Jesus' baptism at the end of chapter 3. And it says this in verse 16. After his baptism, as Jesus came up out of the water, the heavens were opened, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and settling on him. And a voice from heaven said, "This is my dearly loved Son who brings me great joy." Jesus has not done a single thing in his ministry. His ministry hasn't even started. He hasn't performed any miracles, hasn't achieved any great purposes. And God says, "You bring me great joy." There's something in that for us, if we're listening, right? Well, then in verse 1 of chapter 4, immediately, and we go right from that moment to this. Then Jesus was led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted there by the devil. For 40 days and 40 nights he fasted and became very hungry. During that time, the tempter came and said to him, "If you are the Son of God, tell these stones to become loaves of bread." But Jesus told him, "No, the scriptures say people do not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God." Then the tempter took him to the holy city, Jerusalem, to the highest point of the temple and said, "If you are the Son of God, jump off. For the scriptures say he will order his angels to protect you and they will hold you up with their hands so you won't even hurt your foot on a stone." Jesus responded, "The scriptures also say you must not test the Lord your God." Next, the tempter took him to the peak of a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. "I will give it all to you," he said, "if you will kneel down and worship me." "Get out of here, Satan," Jesus told him, "for the scriptures say you must worship the Lord your God and serve him only." Then the tempter went away, and angels came and took care of Jesus. So two Sundays ago, we looked at these three ideas, that the wilderness, metaphorically speaking, what we see in the scriptures when it shows up time and time again, is that it's a place where we wrestle with questions about our identity, where we face and respond to our temptations, and where we experience God's provision. And 2 weeks ago, we really focused on the first and the third of those. You can catch the podcast if you're just itching to know what we talked about in detail. But we really ask questions about our identity and who we are. Today, we're going to look at that second one. Today, we're going to look at this idea of temptations. And to do that, we're going to go back to the text. So actually, if you didn't grab a Bible a minute ago, you might want to do it now on your phone. Grab one from the chair in front of you. It's a pew-ish, I suppose. Because we're going to actually take a little bit of time here and do some interactive dialogue. We do this occasionally here at the Branch. If you're introverted and freaked out right in this moment, it's okay, don't worry. You aren't forced to do anything here. But what we're going to do is look at each of these three temptations. Here's the first one. I'm going to give you about 30 seconds to just read it through yourself and reflect on it. And then another minute or so, it's not going to be a long time, to turn to the person next to you, behind you, or if you'd prefer, just on your own to quietly reflect on these questions. When you look at this first temptation in Matthew 4, what is Jesus being tempted to do? What is he being tempted to believe? What is kind of seductively being held out to him? What exactly is going on here? It's loaves and bread and stones, and it's how do we make sense of that? What is Jesus actually being tempted to believe or to do or to think about? All right, so a few seconds here, just reflect on that. This one actually might be the more challenging of the three in some ways. I would encourage you with all of these, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to give you some time to think about this. Don't only look at the actual temptation. In this case, it would be verse 3, "If you're the Son of God, tell these stones to become loaves of bread." Also look at Jesus' response, because his response tells us, I think, something about what's going on here and what's at stake. Okay? So now find somebody if you want to, if you're that sort of person and you want to turn around or find someone next to you and just have a conversation. Talk about it. What do you think Jesus is being tempted to believe or to do or to become? Ready, set, go. All right, another couple seconds here. What do you think? I'm going to ask you to tell me what you think in one word, if you can. And we're going to write them down up here. All right. So, if you're a person worried about whether or not you have the right answer, I'd invite you to relax. This is not about having the right or the wrong answer in this moment. We're just having a conversation about what we think is going on in the text here, okay? So, if you could, in a word, or maybe two, but, you know, as concisely as you can, what do you think is at stake here? What is he being tempted to do or to believe or to become? What do you think this is about? Just shout it out. Self-reliance. That's good. A-N-C-E. Oh, boy. Alrighty, we're off to a rough start. I think that's right. Okay. Self-reliance. Yeah, I think that's for sure there. What else? Or did anyone want to second that and say, yeah, we talked about that too. Yeah, quite a few of you picked up on that. Good. What else?
Self-identity.
Mm-hmm. Just going to do this. I'm going to use the same self. So his identity is rooted in his self? Is that what you're saying, Matt, or are you saying something different?
Yeah, I'm saying that he's asking if you are the Son of God.
Yeah. Yeah, if you are the Son of God, yeah. He'll say that again in a few minutes, yeah. So are you who you say you are or who God says you are? Mm-hmm. What else would you say is that going on here?
The physical discomfort or comfort of, like, being hungry that you could just eat.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. More immediate, yeah. Yeah, okay. So you're saying, yeah, he's been fasting for a while, he's hungry. Are you going to put that need in front of, am I hearing you correctly, in front of your need for God? Yeah, I'm just going to write the word priority down. Hope that's okay. Okay. You'll know what it means. I'm writing more now. Okay, good. Anything else? Okay, I'm just going to add a word here under self-reliance because I think they're very closely connected, but it's the word control. I think he's being tempted to seize control of his life and his care and not rely on, as you've all kind of picked up on. Good. All right, let's move on to the next one. Then the devil took him to the holy city, Jerusalem, to the highest point of the temple and said, "If you're the Son of God, jump off, for the scriptures say..." And then, like, scripture gets quoted here. It's very clever, right? "He will order his angels to protect you. They will hold you up with their hands so you won't even hurt your foot on a stone." And Jesus responded, "The scriptures also say you must not test the Lord your God." So just quietly reflect on that for a few moments here. Start asking yourself, what's at stake here? What's Jesus being tempted to do or to believe or to become? And then when you want, if you want, turn to a person next to you and have a conversation. See what you think. What's that? All right. Yeah. That there's the response. Sorry, didn't get that one all on a single slide. Yep. We're trying to look at both what Jesus says, and I think the response here is pretty important. So, same thing again. You know what? What do you think Jesus is being tempted to do or to think or to believe? What would you say is the temptation? How would you name it in this example?
Jesus could have done this, you know, bowed down and fainted.
Mm-hmm. It's true. It's very true. It's good. That's where we're going to kind of land here at the end of the morning. Yeah, thanks. So we have a strength to tap into. There's no doubt about that. What would you say is the temptation here that is, though, quite strong in and of itself? What do you think?
To be a spectacle.
To be a spectacle. Can I add the word or, you know, I think of the idea of being impressive. Wow, we're at the temple. This is where, like, everybody is. Think about how amazing you'll be.
You'd actually, like, prove
Scripture,
right?
Yeah, you'll be the fulfillment of Scripture. Everyone will see you fall, and then you'll, like, stop and levitate above the ground. It'll be amazing. You know, everyone will believe. It'll just be really impressive. You'll be very impressive. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm. That's good, Jason. So, you know, if you jump off and, hey, that scripture gets fulfilled, you'll prove your identity. Oh, you'll prove that you are important to God. You'll prove that you are the Son of God. Yeah, let's test it, right? Which is why Jesus then says, hey, you're not supposed to test God. Yeah. What else? I heard you all talking, so I know you were talking about things. Yes, was this it? Hmm. Oh, that's an interesting one. I like it. I like it. Couldn't hear her. She said, right, the temptation to cherry pick scripture. It's interesting. Jesus kind of says, well, this one actually kind of, this passage matters more in this moment than that one does that you just quoted. That's a whole wonderful conversation for us to have at a later time. What's going on there? But certainly there's like the temptation to use scripture to glorify oneself in this moment, right? To elevate oneself. Mm-hmm. Good. Anything else? Yeah. Tempting Jesus to believe that he's powerful. Mm-hmm. That's good. All right, one more. Good work, everybody. Those of you who haven't spoken yet will be called on next time. Just joking. All right, here's the last one. Next, the devil took him to the peak of a very high mountain, showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. I will give it all to you, he said, if you will kneel down and worship me. Get out of here, Satan, Jesus told him. For the scriptures say you must worship the Lord your God and serve only him. All right, why don't we just turn to the person next to us. Let's have a little conversation about this one, and then we'll circle back. So, what do you think is happening here with this one? What's the temptation? To claim power and authority. Did I hear you right? That's good, Fred. Hold on to that one. Good. What else?
To solve your own problems.
Yeah. Solve your own problems. Boy. It's good. Yeah, to only have to focus on you, is that what you're saying, Jason? The temptation to focus on yourself only. How about one more? Good.
That's another thing that they're saying. Like, this is sort of like that shadow of what truth, like, it's almost exactly what God's doing. It's like the shadows of it. So close, but just slightly off.
Yeah. I think it was 2 weeks ago. We talked about that a little bit, right? That the temptations here and the things that come to us are clever. If they were obvious, if they were so blatantly there and wrong, we would be like, oh, well, I'm not going to do that. But there's something about them that maybe rings a little true, or it's a half-truth, or it's a twisted truth, and that's what's going on here. And so there's a reason why we follow these invitations to our false selves and to false purposes and all that sort of thing. It's because they kind of sound like that might be right. Like, maybe I should just bow down to you, because it would kind of take care of the problem and allow me to stay self-centered, and it'd be a nice shortcut to what's ahead. Okay. So let me ask a question here. This is great work, by the way. Let me say something first. I encounter people all the time who are intimidated by the Bible. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to read. I don't know how to read it. Do you see what we just did here? Right? This was not complicated. This was very simple. This could happen around a table after dinner or after breakfast. It's just kind of being curious about the text and not worrying so much about whether or not we're getting the answer quite right or wrong. Right? We're just having a dialogue to explore and ask God, what might you want to say to us? What might be here for us to understand? And if you get somebody to do it with you, all the better, usually. I just want to say that, okay? You can read the Bible. You can, and it is possible. Okay. What would have happened if Jesus had said yes to any of these temptations, do you think? What's the consequence? Have you ever thought about that? What would have happened had he said yes? Right. Yeah, Kayla, I think that certainly could have happened.
Kind of how, like, the person that you think is God was manipulated.
Ooh, heaven. Okay, all right. Good.
Taking on this identity, you would have
Yeah. 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 So I'm gonna kind of just hop right off of that, all right? Because I think when we think about temptations, what do we think about? Chocolate? Again, there it is again, chocolate. It just shows up everywhere, right? We're tempted by chocolate, or there's this temptation thing, and we think of it at a very surface level, like, oh gosh, here's this thing kind of whispering to me. I know I should say no to it, because I want to be good. I don't want to be bad. I don't want to be naughty. I want to be nice, right? And there's some truth in that, maybe, good, bad. We kind of keep temptations like up here on a surface level. I often, when we think about that word at least, I'm being tempted by, and I want to be nice, not naughty, good, not bad. There's actually something a lot deeper at play. There are questions and formational things happening around our identity. And so if Jesus chooses any of these things, Sarah, he is choosing to not pursue his true identity, his true purpose, but he's being derailed and pursuing something false. Like that's the kind of stuff that is at stake when these things whisper to us. And I tend to think about good and bad, naughty and nice, and there's actually something a lot more significant going on. Let me just think about this in a couple of examples, and we'll use the ones that we've been looking at here, like control, you know, the temptation to seize control of your life. Anybody ever heard that whisper? One person has. Yeah, it's a very seductive temptation. It sounds kind of right. Like if I control all of the parts of my life, if I build this life in which I maintain control over the different bits and pieces, then life will go the way that I want it to go, and it will be easier and more fulfilling and all of those things, right? And so we work really hard, some of us do, to maintain control of all the different aspects of life. And on the surface, or maybe at first glance, it seems like, oh, that kind of makes sense, actually. That seems like maybe a good thing to try and do. Until you realize that if you're headed towards that identity and that purpose, you're not headed towards your true identity and your true purpose. Like you can't head towards both at the same time. You're going to get derailed. Or I think about like this one of being impressive and being a spectacle and powerful, being viewed by other people as impressive, and how seductive that whisper is, at least to me. Like if people just think you're amazing, if you just work tirelessly to always project an image of having it all together, wow, then you'll like win the accolades of everyone, you'll have everyone's respect, you'll be lifted up, you'll be celebrated, wow, you'll be happy, fulfilled. You know, this is the whisper that comes to me. Maybe to you, maybe you know what that's like. Or maybe it's one of the other ones up here, like, I'm going to take the shortcut. I'm going to solve my own problems. That sounds right. And we miss who we're really, truly meant to be. You know, I think about, like, when I am pursuing the whisper of being impressive, one of the things that means is that I always have to look like I have my act together, which means I can never really be fully honest with people in my life, and certainly even not the people most closest to me. And do you know what the consequence of that is? It's loneliness. If you're never truly honest, fully honest, it's a very lonely place to live. And so that's not my true self. That's not who God invites me to be or invites you to be. God invites us to be in rich, authentic community with other people. That's our true selves. That's our true purpose. But when I'm investing all this energy into maintaining this image of being an impressive person, my true identity gets left behind. And so there's some really significant stuff happening here. I used to read this story about Jesus in the desert and be like, oh, what a cute story. You know, jump off a building. He's not going to do that. You know, he knows better than that. He's not going to bow down and worship, you know. Like, I don't know. I think I really minimized it and kind of kept it at this naughty, nice, good, bad, surface level sort of thing. I'm not sure that's what's going on here. I think there is some really deep wrestling with identity and with what Jesus really is having to decide is his true purpose, his true self. And so, I thought we might close with a couple of things this morning. I want to invite you to ask yourself if any of these are whispering to you today. Maybe not. Maybe none of those are. Maybe it's something else. I would bet that most of us are hearing the whisper of some temptation to a false self and a false purpose. And I just wonder what that might be for you. And what I want to invite you to do here in this moment, if you would, it's kind of a brave step, I know, but we do this from time to time. We just place our hands in our lap. If you're willing to do that, I invite you to close your eyes. And to actually make your hands into fists. And I want to invite you, again, just to reflect on what might be whispering to you today. And can you imagine the way in which you are holding on to that whisper, that false identity, that temptation? Can you imagine the way in which there's a part of you clinging to it? And if you're ready this, if you're, and you might not be ready this morning, but if you are, what would it be like to open up your hands and to let go of that thing this morning? If you do want to do that, I invite you to open your hands. Take a deep breath. And then I want to invite you to receive with open hands the provision that God gives us when we're in the wilderness. If you are holding on to something and you let it go this morning, what is going to take its place? What is true about you, as God says about you, what is true that you need to receive this morning? Is it that you're loved? Are you doubting that? Is it that you're valued? Do you need to receive courage? Are you feeling hopeless? What is it that you need to receive? And I invite you to ask for it right now. As we open our eyes together, I also want to invite you to come to this table and to receive here the gift of bread and cup, which remind us